I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Well, it's just the two of us once again.
It is.
And because Taylor's a dad.
He's a new dad.
Doing dad stuff. Baby was born. I think we said that last week.
Yeah. Do you remember when his last baby was born and we went to Value Village together?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Thrifted some...
That hat right there.
That hat.
These tongs behind me. I don't know if you can see that in the camera.
Yeah. We got some like fresh New Balance lawn mowing shoes that we wore.
It was pretty fun. We didn't do that this time. I hope you guys do that for me.
We still have a chance.
No, we don't. It's over. Baby's born.
Okay.
Folks, just a heads up. This episode is the episode where we are back in full action on YouTube. So going forward, every Wednesday, every day we release an episode, the full episode in video format, shot very beautifully here in Sick Boy headquarters, at the Snack Labs studio, is going to be on YouTube. So if you like watching people talk,
you can watch us.
You can watch.
And also, you know, for people who have been listening for a long time, but like don't know what we look like.
Oh, you'll be shocked.
You'll be
fucking blown away.
You can see. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I have a podcast that I really like, and they were doing their show for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And I had like vivid pictures of them in my head.
Always a disappointment.
And they went on YouTube. Yeah. And actually, you know what? When I watched their YouTube video, I was like, huh. They're more handsome than I thought.
You know who is the only podcaster that I had listened to for a long time, didn't know what they looked like, then eventually saw what they looked like, and they looked exactly how I pictured them to look? Do you know who it is?
No, who
is it? Ira Glass.
Okay, that makes sense, though.
He looks the way he sounds.
Yeah. And he has a unique voice, so like his character, his look matches that well.
Yeah, weak.
Yeah.
Just joking.
That's mean.
Not that he listens to the show. So folks, this week, we're really excited to bring to you a very beautiful conversation. Our guest this week, her name is Rhonda, and Rhonda actually works here in the same building as us. She owns an art studio.
Which is crazy because we are recording this right now, like weeks after we had this conversation with Rhonda.
Right.
And she's like, she's maybe 50 meters away from us right now.
That's right. Right now. I could probably yell and she would hear. Rhonda! So we hope you enjoy this beautiful conversation that we have with Rhonda. Again, we recorded this when Taylor was prepping for baby. So he was also not here. But Rhonda is a Halifax-based collage artist and gallery owner here in Halifax, and we have a beautiful conversation about mental health and depression, but more importantly, chronic pain. And when the conversation was over, Rhonda hung out for another like hour and a half in the studio. And one of my favorite parts about doing this podcast over the years is that sometimes we have a guest on, and after that recording with our guest, we end up becoming good buds. And I'm very happy to say that Rhonda is truly a friend. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with our new friend, Rhonda. Okay, well, this is going to be a joy because not only do we have our guest Rhonda today in studio, but Taylor's not here. So it's like, I feel like dad's out of town.
Yeah.
The boys can go buck wild.
Yeah.
And we're having somebody over to the house without dad knowing.
I usually feel like when Taylor's away, we can spend money on the credit cards and like get away with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just buy some of Rhonda's art, to fill the space without Taylor knowing.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah. Well, I to give you a little introduction, Rhonda, firstly, thanks for coming on the show today. Really excited to speak with you. Secondly, you applied to be on the show not too long ago. And it was rather quick. Yeah. And when you applied, you were like, hey, oh, by the way, my space is located directly below you guys. I'm in the art studio below you in the same building. And I was like, oh, well,
sorry.
We got to get Rhonda in.
We were like, sorry.
Sorry, we're so loud. Rhonda, you are a Halifax-based collage artist.
Yep.
Very cool. And gallery owner here in Halifax.
Yep.
What is the name of your gallery?
Cuts and Paste.
Cuts so and Paste.
All
love it.
All collage, all assemblage. And it's the first of its kind in Canada so far that I'm aware of.
I love that. That's so sweet.
I plan to keep saying it until someone calls me out and says, no, you're not.
Yeah, right.
No
yeah.
one's well, done it yet.
You heard it here first.
That's
folks.
Right. That's right.
That's so cool. I didn't know what we were talking about today, and I'm really excited because I recently took, in the last couple of years, a class through NASCAD on, I think it was visual journaling.
Yes,
nice.
It was. Yeah.
And so like we did a lot of like my word for it is scrapbooking.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right term or not, but it was cool. Like I got a bunch
History
of old magazines.
History of collage is scrapbooking-ish.
Did yeah. that sort of thing. Yeah. So I'm very excited to nice. Have you here mm-hmm. today and get to dive into some of that.
And for you, Bri, I guess like, you know, what we're going to be focusing on primarily is a conversation around chronic pain, a conversation around depression, and sort of how those two things, whether, you know, isolated or, you know, in combination, can have a pretty direct effect on everything from, and I'm making some assumptions here, but everything from art to
oh, yeah.
self-esteem
yeah.
and how you feel about yourself.
Broad spectrum.
So I guess to kind of, you know, to kick us off, Rhonda, give us a little bit of insight into who you are.
So where do you want this insight to come from? How far back?
As far back as feels good for you.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
All right. I'll try to tie everything into one simple story. So as a young girl, I grew up in a rural town in Newfoundland. There wasn't Fleur de Lis.
Okay, cool. I'm from St. John's, but my whole family's from Bayvert and Seal Cove.
No way.
Yeah. Also,
Bayvert,
middle
as
of
in
fucking
like,
nowhere.
20 minutes away from Fleur de Lis.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Did you used to partake in like Bayvert homecoming? Was Fleur de Lis?
Fleur de Lis like homecoming. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand.
Rager.
It's like 3,000 people.
Yeah.
Right now there's 120. How does that like,
wow.
The last time we had come home here was 600 people. I'm like, and
yeah,
that doesn't even account for most of the people.
Yeah. Just right? so much booze and moose burgers. It's
crazy.
Yeah. It's the
crazy.
Best.
Moose sausage. Too.
Yeah.
It sounds like a made up. That sounds like a made up thing, guys.
It really does. And when you're there, it's like, wow, this is made up.
This is totally not real. Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so you're familiar. There was no art stores, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very little access to art classes, courses, but a lot of access to arts in the general sense of, you know, my mom was a quilter, a knitter, crocheter, craftsperson. So I was exposed to arts, loved the arts. I was one of those girls that kind of hid away, did my own thing, you know, mm-hmm. for the most part. There's some times we won't mention, but yeah. And so that was where I kind of got into arts. And I realized I needed to do something where I could get my hands on materials for like next to no cost and things that were readily available. So collage and paper was kind of my go-to. And then I kind of strayed away from it for years. And this is where the chronic pain comes in, is that I became pregnant in 2015. At the time, I was working full-time as a yoga instructor, a Reiki practitioner, personal trainer. I was doing all of that and quickly realized that my growing body was not able to keep up doing all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of went back through my life and said, well, what can I kind of tap into now to provide extra income first and foremost, and then second of all, not to put too much strain on my body. And collage kind of jumped back out at me, so I started doing more collage. Had my first show Sam was about, who's my son, was about 4 months in a little bassinet. Mm-hmm. And I was doing my first show, kind of a multimedia production. My partner's into theater and he's a singer. He was singing. I was dancing. There was a video production. Oh, yeah. It was wild. And I thought, this is fabulous. Like, this is my new life. And then when my son was about 3, we were playing helicopter. So I had him by the hand, spinning around in the front yard. And something just popped in my back. And I've had SI joint dysfunction for pretty much my entire life. But this, to say something in my head immediately said, this is different, mm-hmm. would be an understatement. I was like, okay, that was not good. But it didn't hurt me that day. So I went to bed. Everything was fine. The next morning I woke up, as embarrassing as this might be, tried to use the washroom. And as I went to sit, everything just gave out. My legs gave out. I fell on the floor. My 3-year-old had to call my partner. I couldn't get up. So it was just, first and foremost, just excruciating pain. And then, of course, the shock of it. Like, why am I on the floor? Why are my legs not working? How come I can't get up? And so for 2 years, I was told by the doctors this was SI joint dysfunction, and I was doing the exercises that I had always done to level out my hips. Mm-hmm. And it got worse and worse and worse. And then 2 years later, I went to the emergency room for my mental health because I couldn't handle the pain. I had a toddler, right? Well, at that time, a 5-year-old. I couldn't walk with him. I couldn't play with him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's okay.
And I feel like I missed out on those years. So I went to the hospital and I pretty much just demanded, like, someone needs to give me answers. Like, why am I in pain all the time? Mm-hmm. And I knew it wasn't SI joint dysfunction. And the doctor at the time said, let me look at your x-rays, 2-year-old x-rays. And I had 2 severely herniated discs that nobody ever mentioned to me.
In your lumbar spine?
L4, L5, and okay. S1, L5. And so I was like, which is contraindicated by the exercises for SI joint dysfunction.
Oh, fuck.
So for 2 years, I was trying to manipulate my hips into this lovely, glorious state of balance and tearing out my discs over and over and over again.
So the exercises that you were doing were actually doing more damage.
Me. Yeah. And so now I have just permanent nerve damage. Been 4 years waiting to see a neurosurgeon for that. Because I get, you know, like numbness. And as an artist, numbness in your hands and arms is a bit concerning.
Yeah.
You know? So there's that. And then because of that, then I developed depression because I was so physically driven, right? I had a lot of, I wouldn't say my self-worth came from my physicality, but certainly a lot of esteem came from what I could do physically.
Sure.
So I danced, I taught yoga, very physically fit to not being able to walk the dog around the block. And so I was like, who am I now? Right. Mm. So there's a moment where I realized how physically driven I had been. And when it was gone, I was like, wow, now, so what's left? And that's where my art, thank God, took over and gave me something to work on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, man, I can sympathize with where you're coming from, as someone who's lived with cystic fibrosis and, you know, spent the majority of my entire life, with like a persistent severe cough.
Mm-hmm.
Also somebody who, you know, my whole life, up till even up till now, my whole life has revolved around physicality. And so, you know, like I was a yoga instructor and we were speaking before the recording. I was an actor, went to acting school and all those things are, you know, your body is your tool.
Yeah.
So you are, you know, you're required to hone your tool so that you can do your craft or whatever that is. Quiet donut. Good. Quiet. Shush. And through that persistent coughing, I would probably 4 times a year throw my back out severely.
Yeah. Yep.
And man, I'll tell you, like, you say that to somebody who maybe hasn't experienced it.
Yeah.
And it's hard to really, it's hard to allow somebody who's hearing that to really understand what that, like all that encompasses.
Yeah.
because to them it's like, oh yeah, you threw your back out. That's, you know, mm-hmm. that must be a rough whatever, like week to recover.
Yeah.
But it's not just the physical pain. Like whenever this would happen to me, I would become an awful version of myself. I was the worst version of myself that existed. And because it has such a direct tie to your mental well-being. And so, you know, and I'm talking from the vantage point of like a, you know, let's say a 25-year-old who, you know, like likes to spend most of his week, like probably drinking in excess and like getting up to no good and, you know, doesn't really have a lot of responsibilities. But then you take that and you place it on somebody who's also a mother to a young child.
Yeah.
And you know, in a family that is that of artists, where again, speaking as an artist, like money is not,
oh my God,
money, starving artists is not, that applies to pretty much everybody who's doing art for the most part, you know, like 99% of artists. Yeah. And so if that's your primary source of income, if that's the way that you are going to put food on the table for your family, and then you can't even do that, plus the pain, plus the way that you like all of a sudden start to hate everything around you and that's yourself and your worldview.
Yep.
Like it is, I mean, fuck, it's not just, oh, she's got a bad back.
No, it's definitely not.
It's so much more.
Do you know, so my dad had ankylosing spondylitis. Mm-hmm. There's a fear that I also have that, or that I'm developing it, and I haven't been tested yet. There's a genetic marker. And if you have that genetic marker, I think it's like 80% of the time you're going to develop it. Haven't been tested for it yet. Again, something that I've been asking my doctor to like, please test me for this, just so I could be prepared, because you never know. And I look at my dad. My dad was never the type of man to get upset. He was so joyous about everything. And I look at him and I'm like, how the hell did you do that? Like you were in pain every day, right? He had bone spurs in his neck. So if we went swimming, he couldn't swim regularly. He had to be on his back because his head would be underwater the entire time if he swam on his chest. And I'm looking at him going, how did you maintain? Because when I was growing up, I never felt like dad was in constant pain. And right. I never felt like he was pissed off with the world like the way that I was, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at him going, how did you have that strength? Because I didn't. Like, I totally didn't.
How old are you?
Right now I'm 44. And this happened when I was 37.
Sure.
Eight.
And so your dad is like, you know, at this point in time, your dad's in his...
Dad passed when he was 62.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 62. So he was probably born in the... like early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's, you know, when you, it's interesting. Cause like when you bring that up, it just makes me think about we just recently spoke about, the naming conventions for generations and where those naming conventions come from and how sort of the previous generation and what happened oftentimes sort of has an implication on the next generation. And, you know, the names oftentimes arise from, you know, whatever that shift is. And so when you think about people that were born in the 40s and 50s, it's like, you know, they're coming off of a time that is,
suck it up,
that
people.
Is already like, I mean, they're coming from a time that just is constant pain, you know, or is constant discomfort.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, as a yoga instructor, you know, I would have people come into class, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, where, you know, it's someone who perhaps is, you know, a man in his 50s or 60s who's never really done yoga before, and they come in and they're moving their body and you can see the pain in their body.
Yep.
But also you don't see them showing that pain. Yep. And I asked my dad this one time because, you know, I noticed something about him where I was like, are you constantly in pain? And he was like, I was for a while, but then... it just, you know, like I just don't really notice it anymore. And it's one of those things where I don't think I have that ability. And also I don't think you have an ability to do that when you are so in tune with your tool, with your body.
Difficult.
Right. So like as a dancer, as a yoga instructor, like, you know, someone's a yoga instructor when all they do is complain about their body. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like yoga instructors are hilarious. So fucking in tune with like ache and
they know too much.
But is it hard that way in the sense that like it almost sounds like, you know, like the narrative that you have is like my dad was going through this pain and mm-hmm. he seemed to deal with it. So do you feel like to some extent that has made it feel harder for you
Absolutely.
To deal with it because you're almost like, well, why can't I just,
yeah.
you know, like get
why
on with
my day? Why can't I just suck it up?
Yeah.
I mean, there were some other factors too, right? Like,
I'm not saying that you should think like,
oh no, like, no. And I recognize that in myself too. Yeah. Like, don't give myself such a hard time over it, but that's difficult. It's hard to give yourself grace when you have an example of someone who just sucked it up.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But I think, yeah, like when you were talking about being a yoga instructor, I think that's part of the issue is I spent so many years knowing what was out of balance and trying to balance it out.
Which is great on one hand.
Yeah. But when that happened, I was like, oh my God, my body's a mess. Yeah. Like I couldn't get a deep breath to save my life. And I still have a hard time doing that. Mm. Like I know my diaphragm's not working properly. I know my intercostal muscles are as tight as anything because they were supporting a back that just wasn't supportive for years, you know? To know all those things, you would think would ease some of the pressure. It would be like, okay, well, I know what I need to work on. But it's almost like a wall.
Yeah.
It's almost like, damn it. These are all the things I need to work on.
There's a bliss to that ignorance,
but
right?
Yeah.
Totally, because, you know, I always think of this conversation that I heard with sleep expert Dr. Matthew Walker, and he's talking about like how bad it is for you to not get 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
And once you know how bad it is to not get 8 hours of sleep, and you know you're not getting 8 hours of sleep, all of a sudden you become, you know, heightenedly aware of like of all of these negative side effects and consequences to not getting that thing that you know that you need.
There's some interesting new data on that, which we can save for another time.
Yeah,
I'll tell you about it after.
I'm curious, Rhonda, when you, so like that, the day after you were spinning your son around and then this all sort of started and you collapsed in the bathroom, did you go to the hospital at that point?
So, interesting story. I had had SI joint dysfunction for so long that I even assumed that that's what it was in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I've had days where it's like bad, but I was like, there's something different. But I honestly could not get out of the house. Like I couldn't get into a car because I was spasming so bad. It never even crossed my mind. And I don't know if this comes from years of dealing with chronic pain. Mm-hmm. To call an ambulance and be like, I can't get off the floor. Right? It never even crossed my mind. So it was 6 months before I finally got out of the house and said, this is not right. 6 months, I should have my hips adjusted by now. There should be no pain. I should be relatively normal again. And then I'm questioning, what is my normal again? You know, like, because I'm usually a little bit loose in the hips or stiff, swings between the two. Mm. There's usually pain associated with that. But this was completely different. So after 6 months, I went to see an osteopath. I couldn't get there by myself. My partner literally dragged me like a corpse into the room, slung me on the table and said, have at her, hope it helps. And then like an hour later, it was like a miracle. I opened that door and I was able to walk out. Like there was pain, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But unassisted walking was huge. Right. So after 6 months, I'm just like, wait a second. Why was I crawling around the house for 6 months? Like, but I think mentally you're broken. It's like, you know, it's not just your body. It's like your brain doesn't process what's happening. It's like, what do I do with this?
Yeah. What is, so like for folks who don't know, herniated disc, to the best of your knowledge, what is a herniated disc, you know, and is there, when you find out that you're suffering from a herniated disc or multiple, what is the sort of prognosis slash sort of, you know, here's the kind of game plan of what we could do to try to alleviate this or.
If I equate it to like a sausage inside of a sausage skin, we'll go back to the moose sausage.
Sure. Yes.
Right, why not?
Extra mustard.
It's a good metaphor there. Yeah. So a herniated disc is like when the filling of the sausage kind of leaks out, right? And oftentimes that leads to nerve pain because now, of course, the nerve is running through the central part of the spine. So it gets exposed. If it's a severe herniation like the one I had, the nerve can be rubbed by, you know, daily activities, and then that leads to more pain. It can cause permanent damage like I have. Yeah, so I'd equate it to almost like a sausage that's mm-hmm. in your spine. Mm-hmm.
Isn't it wild that like you have these nerves in your body, and when they're like touched or rubbed in the wrong way, that they can like absolutely destroy yeah. your life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I think of I've had nerve pain in my teeth before.
Yes.
And like biting into something
yeah.
when you have that nerve pain, and it's like this like electric, like screaming yeah. electrical signal yeah. that's sent to your brain that's like just makes you want to.
It's unlike any other pain.
It's crazy. It's insane.
If you know the feeling of nerve pain, it has such a different quality from, say, like, you know, pain from sore muscles or ligaments, or, you know, like a blunt force trauma, or, you know, it's the worst
pain imaginable. Honestly, yeah. I'm saying this from like my experience of, you know, thinking of the difference of like, you know, breaking an arm or like cutting your skin or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like the nerve, the difference in the type of pain, like they all hurt in different ways, mm-hmm. but that sharp electrical.
I said I would have 10 more children than to ever go through that again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
Have you ever had a paper cut though?
Between your fingers?
Yeah, yeah.
Under your fingernail?
Fuck.
Well, that's
way worse.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I forgot about those. I think like...
As a collage artist, to ask if you've ever had a paper cut? Seriously?
Yeah, right?
Multiple, yeah.
So with a herniated disc, what is there, you know, is there any kind of medical intervention, whether it be surgery or...
Depending on where it is and how bad it is, there's surgeries and things. My uncle right now is in hospital recovering from a back surgery.
Okay.
To fix exactly that. So maybe it's hereditary.
Okay. And in your case, is that like, you know, how far along or how intense does it need to be before someone like your uncle takes the route of surgery?
So he was bedridden for about 6 months. My father, I mean, this was 20 years ago. They said he could have taken surgery because he had spinal fusion. So ankylosing spondylitis is a type of arthritis. It breaks down your bones. They fracture, but when they heal, they fuse together rather than healing normally.
Mm-hmm.
And the surgery 20 years ago was remarkably different from what it is now for that specific thing. So I'm assuming it's the same for herniated discs too.
Right.
Obviously we're moving along at all times. Hopefully that's how it should be working. But
you mentioned that the first doctor that you spoke to sort of misdiagnosed mm-hmm. or didn't see that there was a herniated disc on the X-ray.
I think when I said, listen, I've had SI joint dysfunction my entire life,
they just assumed it was
just
that.
Boom, that's your diagnosis. But what baffles me is that the X-rays were right there. And if I had seen them, I would have seen it, because when when I went to the emergency room, when they showed me the X-ray, I was like, oh my God, it's as clear as day.
Yeah. The sausage is coming out of the sausage.
Right.
Yeah.
The sausage skin's not holding the damn sausage. Yeah. Someone should have told me that.
Does that make the, like in terms of like surgical intervention or the options that are there for you? Like you mentioned that after 2 years of not being diagnosed and sort of doing these exercises that were actually making it worse, that, that you've caused long-term nerve damage. Like what are the options, I guess, in that case too?
You know what? I'm still trying to figure that out myself.
Right.
Because I've been on a wait list now for 4 years to see a neurosurgeon.
Whoa.
To see exactly that. Like what has happened, what's the damage that's done, and then what can we do about it?
Why a neurosurgeon?
I think because my neck is also involved, unfortunately. Okay. And anything to do with the nervous system, they want to have a neurosurgeon. So we're going to wait and see. I mean, and it's difficult because it's not, if someone were to say, what are your symptoms? It's not the same. Like I could go to the emergency room tomorrow and then 4 months down the road and it'll be two different things because the nerves are acting up in different places or my muscles are spasming in different places. And then that leads doctors to go down the garden path and say, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And so, you know, without a proper diagnosis, because I feel like I still don't really truly have a proper diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I know there's herniated discs. I know they're not herniated right now, I don't think. But I'm still having the numbness. I'm still having the nerve pain. I'm still having, like, there's not a day goes by that I don't have pain. Mm-hmm. Pain never went away. It's just maybe a 2 out of 10 all the time.
Right? I imagine that like the hardest part of that sounds like dealing with the sort of mental health implications of dealing with
for myself. I can say like the pain, I never want to go back to that acute phase ever again. if I could stay right here in this numbness and if this is my new normal, then I can get on with life. But the mental aspect, yeah, it was really, really difficult. Mm. And I think as a mom, he's my only child. And I look at that. So from 3 to 5, I mean, those are some of the best years of having your child, right? And I'm literally on the floor, you know, crying most of the time. And he has to see that. So that's had an impact on him too, right? Mm-hmm. So it travels on like that. And then that makes me go back to my dad because I'm like, he was in pain all the time. And I know there were times he went to bed and he was there for a day or two and then he'd be shuffling down the hallway. But I didn't recall it the way that in my head, I feel like my son's going to recall me because he was the one on the phone calling his dad saying, mommy can't get up at 3. Like, that's big.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so, really tough. Like, it makes me think though, too, is that I feel like in your journey of like trying to get to the answers and, you know, maybe I'm getting ahead of ourselves with the way that you've been using art in a therapeutic sense. You know, we were talking to Gabor Mate on the podcast a few weeks ago. And
I was listening to that. I loved it.
And he said something that changed the way that I think about having kids. Like, I really want to have kids in the next few years. And I've one of my hesitancies in the past about having kids is this fear of like, I don't want to fuck them up. And like, I'm a child of divorced parents and like have a lot of trauma around my parents and my relationship with them. And so it's been something that's made me really nervous about having kids. But I think one of the takeaways from the conversation that we had with Gabor is like the fact that, you know, people of our generation are thinking about the impact that we have on our kids.
Such a step forward.
It's such a step forward. And so like the fact that you're thinking about, you know, even maybe in a way that's a more worrisome perspective of like, oh, I hope that this doesn't have this negative impact on my son. I feel like that is still a way that you're thinking about it in a way that, you know, shows how much you really love him and how much you care for him and how you want him to, you know, grow up into the best version of himself. And so I don't know, like it's hard for me to think that like, yes, that's a traumatic experience, but also it's an opportunity to display a sense of resilience and like show him how to be vulnerable and authentic and all these other things. Yeah. And so, I don't know.
And like, I mean, the other thing too, and you know, I'm no expert, right? But
me neither.
One of the things that, like I said, theater school dropout here. So fucking take everything I say with a grain of salt.
I'm a full-time podcaster, so I don't know shit.
but I think there is something to be said for, so yeah, okay. Like 3 to 5 going through this experience where he sees mommy in these like in these dire straits and so okay yeah sure like perhaps that will have some sort of effect down the road, but also, you know, from 5 to 10, like those are also I have a hard time remembering much before the age of 5.
Yeah. This is what
right?
I'm hoping.
And so and so it's like right now is a time where, you know, in the very least, there's you've gotten over the physical hump of what you were in, and perhaps you can maintain that, and that's awesome, and maybe not.
You know, I think the physical hump is one aspect, but the mental, like you were saying, like when he wants to play, in the back of my mind, it's like, well, what about if I hurt myself again,
right.
And then I'm out for another year, 2 years,
right?
So there's. I know this about myself and I'm sure he feels it. There's times he says, mommy, can we do this? And I'm like, buddy, I don't know if that's safe for mommy. So I'm limiting myself for fear of what might happen if I don't. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's difficult because I want to be that mom that's out, you know, running around in the snowbanks and stuff like that. Yeah. But if I slip the wrong way, am I going to be out for 2 more years?
Right. I guess where I was going there was kind of like, you know, even amidst that scenario, maybe there's something to be said for the way that those conversations unfold.
Yeah.
So that it isn't just, oh no, mommy can't.
Yeah.
And more of like a, you know, redirecting the desire to play to having like a, I don't know, like a, you know, a conversation, a meaningful conversation, with a child so that they don't equate like, oh, when I wanted to play, mommy was never there like throw the ball with me.
Yeah, exactly.
And instead of that, it's, oh, when I wanted to play, mommy couldn't do this.
Yeah.
And I know why. And, you know, I'm glad that my mom was there to like
be open.
Be open. Exactly.
Yeah. And imagine like maybe your son is 10 years old in that school and there's a kid in a wheelchair who plays differently and isn't able to take part in some of the things that some of the other kids are. And your son has this reference for like, okay, we can do things differently and still build a meaningful 100%. Relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, to that point, you know, especially honing in on the depression, I know that when, so, you know, with depression, especially depression that's brought on by a particular event or, you know, so in your case, like this physical sort of limitation and pain, even after you get out of that physical side, you know, once you are clear from the thing that started the depression, doesn't mean that the depression goes, oh, like, I don't need to be here anymore. It's like, bye. The depression's like, motherfucker, I moved in.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I'm paying rent. So like I'm sticking around. So I'm just curious, like, how do you, what are the ways in which you manage your depression and how are you sort of navigating your relationship to your depression since its onset?
Just to, like, the first time I experienced depression was actually while I was pregnant. So my hormones went ballistic.
Sure.
And then when I was 5 months pregnant, my dad passed just suddenly. I was actually teaching yoga that night. And do you know what's really strange? I was teaching the final phase of the class, right? Everyone's laying there and they're nice and peaceful looking. But inside I felt like something was just off.
Mm.
And I couldn't take part. And I felt like I wasn't leading a very good class. And I was like, I just chalked it up to, well, you're pregnant. You're 5 months along. Like, things are getting weird. And so I went home and I was making supper. My partner came and told me that dad had passed.
Mm.
And that just, because I hadn't seen him. I don't know if this is true for you, being from a small town. I didn't get home much.
Sure.
Like, after I left home, it was kind of like, okay, once every couple years. But there had been a 5-year gap of me seeing my mom and dad. And the big plan was when my son was born, we were all going to have that, you know, lovely reunion. And instantly I was like, damn it. Like that, my son never gets to meet him. I don't get to see him. It was 5 years ago that I saw him last.
Mm-hmm.
So the depression started then.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had this, you know, when my son was born, I was like, yes, I have this beautiful boy whose nose was squished because apparently it was tight inside the canal for a while. And I felt so bad. He came out looking like Rocky. It's like, boof.
Born with character.
Huh? Yeah. And the doctor's like, oh, 3 days, that'll be gone. 3 months later, still there. But it eventually went away. But then I had postpartum depression that I didn't even recognize at the time. You're just in it, you know? And afterwards I look back and I was like, oh my God, I was really struggling. You know, so I think one of the major aspects is the recognition of what it is and knowing the onset and feeling when your body. So to me, depression is more like a depletion. It's like I'm depleted of energy. I'm depleted of confidence. I'm completely, I just feel done, empty, right? So when I can recognize that I'm starting to feel that way, then I can start to put up some defenses. But if it hits me out of nowhere, then I'm like, it feels like you're left in an army of one against the world, right? Mm. So for me, it's preparation. Now, I have a type A personality. So it's like, okay, if I know it's coming, I can prepare, right?
Mm.
If I don't know it's coming, if something in the outside world knocks me off my feet, then I could be taken down quite a few notches, right?
Yeah.
So my first year in business, I was at work one day, mom calls me and she's like, I'm full of cancer, right? Mm. So I was like, geez, like, and this woman, when I say she was at the hospital more times than not, is like not an understatement. Like, she had so many issues, but cancer was never one of them. April 11th was when she called me to say that. And then on May 9th, she was gone. Like, so again, like, it was just no time, right? And I kept saying, mom, do you want me to come home? She's like, no, when I get my testing done, then it will be time to come home. So I'm mentally trying to prepare because I know this is going to be a hard hit again. And then I'm calling her at the hospital and there's no answer. And I'm just like, she's not answering. Okay, something's up. I get in touch with the reception and they're like, you better come. And I'm like, what is happening? Like, she just told me she got diagnosed. She wasn't even finished her testing. Mm-hmm. And then on May 9th, she was gone.
What type of cancer was it?
Liver, spleen, and lymph nodes, which is, again, baffles me that it was never caught. Mm. Like, she had so much blood work and stuff done prior to that. Nothing ever showed up. And then to be gone in less than a month, it's like, so, like, I was not prepared.
Yeah.
Right? Her phone call to say she had cancer, I started. I initiated the sequences, you know. I was like, okay, this is going to happen. This is going to be, it's going to be some hard months ahead. She's going to get this testing. Be prepared for the results. Be prepared to help her through, you know, whatever treatments she can get, if there is any. But none of that happened. So it just kind of hit me out of left field again.
Yeah.
So again, the lack of preparation meant that I just fell into a depression again, right? So for me, if I can foresee things, which is why I like to have, and this is, I don't recommend to anybody, but a tight list of this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is what to prepare for. Mm-hmm. So if it feels like I have some sort of control, I can usually handle it. Mm-hmm. But if it's out of my control and it just happens quickly and I don't have time to prepare and I don't have time to talk to myself and say this is going to happen, then yeah, it's like, it's almost like my brain just says, can't compute. Done. Yeah. Right? And it takes me a while to get back online.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
What about your art? How does art play a role in your life as it pertains to anything that you go through that is a struggle?
It's kind of my meditation. It's my quiet space. It's so, have you ever heard the saying, like, know things so well that you can like break the rules? Mm-hmm, so your hands are just doing, right? So that's kind of where I am now with it. And I'm just doing, and it's kind of subconscious sometimes. Like, I don't know what's coming out, especially with my abstract works. I do another style of work that's really tedious, really meticulous. Based on my architectural background, it's like mostly buildings, and everything has to be perfectly cut straight and lined up and representational. If I'm depressed, I do not do that style because it's too much. It's too many details, right?
Is that like an indicator for you when you're
when my artwork starts to change? And you're like, it's like, I'm heading into some abstracts. What's going on?
What's up with that?
Yeah. But I use it as a tool, right? So my series right now is trying to release grief. And now I'm like, let's just have at it. Like, whatever comes out, comes out. Let's not judge it. It's not representational at all. It's very abstract. And I'm just trying techniques to get out the anger and the frustration. Like, I lost both parents without time to process, you know?
I have an image of your current project up here. Tell us about the project. Like, what, you know, what
beautiful.
How are you doing it? What's the process? What's it called?
So it's called Deep Cuts. And it's all about layering, which is kind of signifies who we are as humans. I mean, we're all layers of things that have happened to us, people we meet, things we hear, you know, experiences. And so I'm representing that by multiple layers of paper. Some of them are personal notes, you know, so there's stuff hidden in there that no one really knows and won't know except me, but it's symbolic in that way. So I'm kind of burying things in the layers. And then the Deep Cuts, the name of it is about the things that happen in life that really, like, they feel like they cut you open, spread you out for the whole world to see. So it's like, and I felt a lot of anger about my dad because there was guilt because I hadn't gone home often enough, you know, and I hadn't been there for some pretty important things. And I was like, it was 5 years. Like, who does that? Who doesn't see their parents for 5 years, right? And so some of these are like deep slashes. Like it's just me taking my blade and hacking into the layers. And, you know, so the first few that I did was mostly anger. And what are the steps of going through grief? Like, I'm pretty sure anger is like one of the first ones. So I think I'm through that now. So that piece in particular, I've slowed it down and I'm more methodical about my cuts. And I'm thinking through like, okay, well, like how many layers, you know, does that one take? And I'm, you know, it's, but it's very cathartic, very cathartic. And art has always been, I've always written poetry. I've always drawn. I've always, you know, collage is probably full time the last 10, 12 years. But I used to do it as a child. But I feel collage to me is the medium that feels the most human-like, if that makes any sense. And because it's about the layers, right? And I feel like we are layered beings.
Yes, totally.
And then, so this series with the cuts are just representative of all the things that have changed my layers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a bit of a technical question about collaging.
Yeah.
But like that idea of layers. I was just thinking about, like, I did a few collage projects when I was in university with Ryan Oxner. We like did, we got really high and made collages and I framed one and put it up, but something I was just thinking about, but the idea of the layers, this is probably a dumb question, but
ask it.
You know, the idea of like creating a collage, and
how many layers is the right amount of layers?
Well yeah, I was actually gonna say, like, you know, like have you ever thought of, I just had this idea of like, oh, I don't know why this came to me so suddenly, but I had this idea of like, oh, if I ever, maybe the next time I do a collage piece, I will have a layer that is underneath the actual art that you cannot see.
Right.
But if you were to tear it away, you would find that there's a whole other, like, whatever style or color palette or whatever that's under there. Is that something that people do?
It's a secret collage.
Oh, fuck yeah. Dude.
Yeah.
That's
exactly some of the things I'm doing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I'm having, like, there's a recipe card that I, you know, that I took a photocopy because I didn't want to use the real one.
Sure.
But it's symbolic of things being passed through a family, you know, and things being passed down and who built me up and how I'm built and things like that.
God,
100%.
What a therapeutic, like, you know, what a great way to just process and to think
it's a visual representation of, if you look at it and you feel it, there's all these like crevices and cuts and things and none of us are perfect. All of us have these cuts, if you want to use that as an analogy. To do it on a panel that's nice and crisp and clean and you've just layered it up, right? And then you look at it and you say, okay, let's cut into this sucker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about the things that have caused, and I keep using the word cuts, but trauma of any sort, right? So the frustration that I felt about, like you were saying with the financial stuff, I mean, the year that my back gave out, I would get up to the table for 5 minutes and work on something, get back down on the floor for 10 minutes, cry it out, get back up for five, just to try to produce stuff. But there's frustration that comes with that. So I'm using these canvases and I'm just like hacking.
How big are they? Like the pieces that I brought up there? Like
The ones that I've done so far are 11 by 14 because I'm still, it's not experimental, but I'm certainly pushing on the edges of the technique and saying, what can it do? What can it produce? But I want to do some larger ones. And I also want to do a three-dimensional. So the motif that's going to be throughout the entire show is the home, which I think just kind of represents where your layers come from, right? So I'm using that motif, but I want to build a three-dimensional home.
Cool.
And then, hack into that as well.
This might be a weirder question too. Have you ever thought about sewing back up the cuts and then like
I've kept the pieces that I cut out. I actually keep them because to me that represents, say for example, in my memory, I've lost the memory of a story that happened to me as a child and somebody tells it to me. It's now reintegrated, but in a whole new way. So if I cut out a piece, I keep that strip and I say, oh, this is really interesting. I don't want to throw this strip out. I'll actually re-adhere it in a different place.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's almost like it may have fallen out of your repertoire of memories and layers, but somebody gives it back to you in a new way.
Cool.
But it's told in their version. So now you have to just put up with it and layer it on top with whatever you have.
I love that. And the, and like, you know, Jerry, you said this, you use the word therapeutic, and it's very, you know, like the therapeutic, you know, metaphor in the work is really apparent. I'm curious if you've done any, actual like therapy, speaking to either talk therapy or other forms.
Yeah. A few different types. And, to be honest, I was just booking an appointment this morning before I came here. Cause I recognize that I'm not dealing with this grief well. That's hard to admit. But my son is now showing signs of having issues surrounding grief. And I'm like, okay, because I'm not processing it now. I can't expect him to process it. He's eight, right? So I have to tidy up my own closet and deal with it. The art is tremendously helpful, but it's just one tool of the toolkit that's available. So
I would love for you to share with our listeners your first of all, Cuts and Paste is the name of your studio, and I know that you lead like collage nights at the gallery. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, they're incredible. So I feel like collage is one of those mediums, and everybody says this, and some people say it to me and they think that I'm going to take it offensively, and I don't. They're like, oh, I remember doing this when I was five, like in kindergarten, right? But it's that tactile, you're getting your hands dirty, and it's, I can give you tons of techniques, right? But if I don't give you any, you're still able to create something.
Yes, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
So people come in and it's a self-led thing. They have at the resources. They choose whatever the hell they want to use. It's not like paint night where you go in and you have certain colors and, you know, we're going to layer it in this way. I don't say anything to anyone. Just use the resources. Do whatever the hell you want. Don't even clean up when you're leaving. Just take your stuff, you know. And it's so therapeutic. Like so many people have come in and said, my God, this is so peaceful. This is like, you know, this is exactly what I needed. This is so meditative. And the same words appear over and over. People don't usually say therapeutic, but they're getting at that. You know, it just feels like they're not pressured to create a certain thing. They're not feeling like it's not, you know, something so grandiose that they can't do, like it's accessible. Oh, it's just wonderful. Like everyone leaves. And lately what I've been doing is a collaborative collage. So someone starts it and we pass it around. Everyone adds something. Cool. It's hilarious.
How often are the collage nights happening?
I'm trying for once a month.
Okay.
Yeah. But I've introduced another thing called cozy collage because I'm a brunch fan and we're mixing brunch and collage together. So
I love it.
Yeah. So now it's twice a month, once in the morning and once at night.
I was going to save this for after the recording and ask you this, but maybe just to gauge interest from our listeners. It'd be cool if, for local Halifax listeners, if we did like a sick boy cuts and paste collage night collaboration where we got some of our listeners to come in.
100%.
I would love that.
Do it together.
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be really fun.
It would be.
If you're listening to this right now and you're in Halifax and you're interested in that, send us a message and we'll
set it up. Fly up.
Yeah, fly
over. Come on over.
Let's do it.
The papers fly.
I want to say that this is like, you know, it's been a really lovely conversation. I really commend you for being so open and so vulnerable with us and sharing your experiences. And I know that this type of thing is oftentimes like really challenging to talk about. I mean, you even mentioned it. It's like it's hard to say some of these things.
Well, because, as you can tell, right?
Yeah, like you're in the midst of it, but also it shows that, you know, you care and that you're trying to like do the work that is required to like be
if
the best
there's
version.
Anything to take away, it's like do the work.
Yeah.
And that's true for anything. Like with collage people, right? They're like, oh, I'm stuck. And you've heard this from artists all the time, haven't you?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm having a creative block.
Yeah.
Do anything. Mm-hmm. Like I'll just go in and riff through magazines and cut out images. I don't know if I'm going to use them or not, but just be in your area that you feel good in. Do something in that area just to keep yourself going. Like it's so important for me when I feel depressed. If I can say I went in and I cleaned up the place today.
That's a win.
Good on me. Right.
How can people find you? How can people find the studio? How can people stay up to date with your work?
I've been told finding the studio is difficult, but we're right here, guys. Like,
this building is a weird bit. It's got weird entrances.
My background's in architecture. This building freaks me out. I'm like, where's the front door?
Yeah.
So we're here at 5663 Norbernard, suite 101 for me. And then cutsandpastegallery.com is the place to find everything. I try to update it. It should be, I'm not going to say daily, but at least weekly, update it. And then for myself personally as an artist, everything is Little Bits of Paper, Big Art.
Oh, I love that.
We will include the links to all of that in the show notes. And again, Rhonda, really, really just an absolute pleasure to meet you. Have you in the studio.
Nice to be upstairs.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
How sweet is she?
She's amazing. And I think, if I remember, because again, we're coming back to you in the present time, and that conversation that we just had with Rhonda, that was a while back. But at the end, I think I put out a call to people on our Discord, if you want to join us here in Halifax.
We're going to have a little collage night.
A collage night. Yeah. Then let us know on Discord, because we will absolutely make that happen.
Yeah. www.cutsandpastegallery.com. If you're in Halifax, check it out. If you're coming to Halifax for a visit, what a great thing to do. Like, what a unique, fun thing to do in town. Go do a collage night with your partner or, you know, your family if you're here for like a visit. So I didn't have anything prepped for this wrap up, primarily because I've been thinking about this thing that was said to me the other day quite a bit, and I thought it'd be fun to just talk to you about it. Actually, I kind of talked to my therapist about it this morning. So in that conversation with Rhonda, we kind of talked a little bit about like grieving the self that you lost due to your illness. Okay. So I thought that, you know, when Trikafta came out and I took the first dose, and like really soon after, everything changed. My lung function skyrocketed. I started getting fat. I was feeling healthier than ever.
We almost changed the name of this podcast.
Fat Boy Podcast.
Thick Boy.
Yeah, that's right. Big Boy Podcast.
Thick Boy with two C's.
That's already a thing. Brandon Schaub is Thick Boy.
So really?
Big Baby J.
I love it when you do that voice. It does something to my butthole. Makes it pucker a bit.
So when I took the Trikafta, there was, and we probably spoke about this a little bit, but there was a bit of a almost like an identity crisis that came along with it.
Yeah.
You know, there was like this sort of, you know, I spent like 30 some odd years making decisions in my life. And those decisions were based on the fact that I didn't have a future. So like financial decisions that were poor, that would be poor financial decisions if you were going to live a long time.
Yeah. But like living to 30 or 35.
Living to 35, it's like, well, you know, or even living to 40, let's say. It's
doesn't
like
matter that much.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter that much, right? It's like you're not saving for anything. You're not going to have kids to like, you know, save to give them money when you die or anything.
Yeah.
Maybe my partner would be a little annoyed that I didn't like leave them with a, what is that, a dowry? No, that's when you get married. So that, you know, there's the financial side. But then there's also decisions of like life choices, right? Experiences, things that you do.
Do you mean that in the sense that like you wanted to experience as much as possible, so you would go out and do a lot of things?
Yeah.
Or rather than like putting it off to, you know, the sort of like famous idea that like you work while you're ready to work, and then you enjoy your life when you retire, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like that sort of crazy idea. I mean, you don't really have, there's not even the opportunity to think like that when you think that you're only going to live to be 35.
Right. Yeah. And so like, and these are choices that I'm really happy that I made, right? Like saying yes to experiences that like, I would always think about whenever I had an opportunity to do something that seemed a little like wild, I would think, the way I sort of like went about life was thinking, okay, when I die, if somebody wrote a book about me, what are the choices that I would make to make that book a fucking page turner?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And that's a good way to live life.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But then with Trikafta, right? It's like all of a sudden, okay, now I'm like, now I'm looking at getting old. Let's say I live to, who knows how long I'll live. None of us know. But this like thought of I'm probably going to be dead by 45 or 40, like that's gone now. I don't have that. So now all I can assume is, well, what if I live as long as you live? You know, what if I live to 85 or 90? Okay, that changes a whole bunch of things. And so like, you know, this year when I turned 36, I think we talked about this on the show. It was like the first year where I was kind of bummed about my birthday. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I was bummed because it was like the magic of Christmas was gone. You know, right. It was like, oh, it's not special anymore.
Yeah, it's like you find out that Santa doesn't exist.
Yeah. Wait. And so, but here's the thing. I thought I dealt with all that. I thought I like, you know, I thought mentally I just dealt with it and like I'm cool with the outcome. You know, it's much better off to be living longer than it is to not. Mm-hmm. And there's some identity challenges that come with that, but like I'm cool with it. But I think I've realized that maybe I haven't fully dealt with it. And maybe that played a role in my like declining mental health recently, right? Like not the only thing, there's other things that I know kind of contributed to that, but maybe that was a part of it. So anyway, all that to say, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because somebody said something to me the other day that really fucking smoked me where I went, holy shit. Yeah. I never thought about it like that. So my buddy Mikey has just moved to town and we actually recorded a podcast with Mikey a number of years ago on PEI. And he's here working and, you know, he's here for a little bit and back to PEI, back and forth, like week on, week off. And we went out for drinks the other night and we were hanging out and chatting. And I know Mikey. I don't know Mikey that well. You know, we're like, we're sort of like, we're past the point of acquaintances. We're pals, but we're not like close friends. And he was asking me, he was like, what's the deal with like, you know, weren't you supposed to die? Like, what's going on with that? And so I told him about Trikafta. I was like, oh, actually, well, like, here's this whole thing. And he was like, whoa, that's crazy. And then he said this. Because he was like, that sounds awesome, but that must be a bit weird, right? And I was like, it is. Yeah. And actually, like, people don't really talk about it, but a lot of people in the CF community are sort of struggling with this. And he goes, you know, it's kind of like if you think about someone who's like, family member, he didn't say this, but this is kind of what he got at. You know, like if you think about someone whose like husband was like a soldier and they went overseas to a war and the partner of that person finds out that your husband was killed in action. And so this woman grieves the loss of her husband. She's like, fuck, all right. My husband's dead. You know, she takes whatever, 3-4 years to like process that grief, moves on, finds another partner, you know, maybe has a kid. And then all of a sudden she gets a knock at the door and she goes and she opens the door and it's her dead husband who's alive and well. And it turns out he was just in a POW camp. He was just a prisoner of war and they thought he was dead. Turns out he wasn't. He escaped, got rescued, whatever. And he comes home and he's like, I'm back. I'm here. I'm alive. How fucked up would that feeling be?
Yeah.
Because it's both kind of amazing, like, but also really challenging.
Yeah. Because you've gone on and like,
you've moved on.
You've created this whole other life
that
exists under the idea that this other thing isn't true.
That's right.
That this other thing isn't happening.
And that right there is the perfect analogy of what this is.
Oh,
I grieved the fact that I am not going to live as long as my peers. And I moved on from that. I was cool with it. I found my other life and was leaning into that. And then all of a sudden, Trikafta comes and knocks on my door and goes, hey, guess what? I'm back. Your life's back.
That life that you didn't think you would have.
That life that you didn't think you would have again.
Is here.
Or have ever is here. And man, when he said that, I was like, holy shit, what the fuck? Like my whole world just kind of like, just like flipped.
Yeah. I get that. I find it interesting the idea of, I was hanging out with a friend this morning who was telling me about this challenge that he's been going through. And, he used that same turn of phrase that you used earlier. Like, I'm pretty sure I've dealt with like the acute sort of like trauma of or grief of this situation. And, you know, for him, this thing that he was going through was only 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I had this thought that like, I think, I'm not sure we can fully like deal with it like that. Like, I think it's naive to think that like, you know, you go through this traumatic experience and then in a short amount of time, and maybe not even just a short amount of time, but in some sort of time that it's just like, now it's no longer a thing.
Yeah.
I feel like when we go through these like ginormous life shifts, that they leave some sort of residual effect, and you can like, quote unquote, deal with it to some extent where it becomes more normal in your existence. Mm. But I think it's important to be aware of like how that might still show up.
Yeah.
Down the road. And
I think it depends. Like, I think you're right that's probably the experience for a lot of people. But I think there's people that do deal with whatever. And they, and you know, the thing that I was talking to my brother-in-law the other day about UFOs and aliens. And we were talking about how like what's really valuable when it comes to like your beliefs and belief systems is, it was something his partner said to him that I loved, which is like strong beliefs loosely held.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
And so it's like, okay, if you strongly believe that you have dealt with your grief or whatever it is, okay, stand steadfast in that strong belief, but hold on to that loosely and be willing to move and shift if in the chance that it comes around that it's not quite as solid ground as you thought it was.
I think that's the most admirable characteristic of a person, when they can like be passionate about something but also be willing to change their mind.
Yeah.
There's a great Walt Whitman quote that is, do I contradict myself? Very well. Then I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes.
Yeah.
And the idea is that, you know, like if you said something.
That's a Walter Mitty quote?
No, Walt Whitman. Okay. But I love Walter Mitty too.
I know you do.
But the idea is that like,
dude, that movie sucks. Come on.
No, it doesn't. It's amazing.
What do you think that movie has on Letterboxd?
1.9. I don't think that it's a good movie.
I'm just fucking with you, Brian. It makes you feel good.
It's funny. I was actually speaking to somebody about Walter Mitty last week. And
that
I was
does not
saying,
surprise me.
I was saying that it's not a good movie that I would recommend to you in the
sense
dude,
that... 3.7 with a pretty beefy... amount of 5 stars.
You know what it is? I think it's less about the actual how good it is as a movie, but how much it speaks to certain people.
Yes,
that like I feel like I see myself on the screen when I see that character.
For people who don't know, the Secret Life of Walter Mitty is like a classic pornography that came out in the early 2000s.
But the idea of this quote about contradicting yourself is that if you contradict yourself, like people are oftentimes, they want to defend their stance that they had maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really great and admirable character trait when you said something a couple of weeks ago and now you're saying something different now. The idea is that you've changed your mind. Like, isn't it important that we grow as people and our minds change? And I think that if you have that sort of mindset where you're open to your mind changing about things, then, you know, you can have a really interesting life experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's sort of what I'm going through right now, is just realizing that I thought I had processed this like new lease on life, but I'm letting go of that belief and willing to explore what it would mean if I haven't maybe.
Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel? What does that feel like?
Feels good, but it also feels like, oh fuck, now I gotta do work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's probably some like work that needs to go into this.
It reminds me of that feeling of like, you know, when you're sad and you're like, I know that if I listen to a sad song right now, it will make me cry. And I know that that's probably good for me, but I don't want to do it.
Just sent a text to our manager to tell him to fuck off a recording. So anyway, I just thought that that would be an interesting thing to kind of bring up hot off the heels of a conversation around grieving the loss of the person you once knew or the one that you once thought you were. And if that resonates with you listening to this or watching this on YouTube, because all episodes from here on forward are going to be on YouTube in full video version where you can see us discussing these things in person and be surprised at what we look like, leave a comment. Or if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, send us an email, info@sickboypodcast.com or letters@sickboypodcast.com. Or on Spotify, you know, there's a little Q&A button. It says, what are your thoughts on this episode on your mobile app? Leave a
you
thought.
Can let us know.
Yeah.
I just want to say, Jared, thanks for sharing that. I love when we have these types
of
conversations.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the only thing missing was I didn't have any fun fart sounds to go along with it. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We love that you are listening to the show, whether you're a fan or not. And if you want to support the podcast, you can do that in a number of ways. Like I just said, you can go over to YouTube, leave a comment, go to Spotify, answer the Q&A. You can also make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast on any of the platforms that the podcast is coming to you from. And of course, if you would like to be a guest or you have a suggestion for a guest, send us an email. You can go to our website, sickboypodcast.com, to find all the relevant links there. And we would, again, love to hear from you. What do you think about this conversation?
And if you want to take part in Collage Night, you can join us on Discord and let us know. I promise to set that up. We'll make that happen.
And a big shout out to everybody that helps make the podcast happen.
Huge thank you to Jeff Lonis, our manager, who's annoyingly texting Jer right now. thanks to Rich O'Coyne, who does the theme music, Donovan Morgan for the sound design and editing that he does. And everybody else, Annika, we love you. Thanks, guys.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Jeremy, and this is Sick.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.